Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Saidam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. For those of our listeners who are joining us from the previous program, I am sure that you would have enjoyed that beautiful rendering of Jagadot Dharana by the little kids. And it is so apt that this coincidence happens in this manner, because we are in the process of proceeding in the next episode of the story of this Jagadot Dharana himself, that is our dear Lord Krishna, as penned by our dear Lord Sai Krishna. And like last week, this week too, joining me is Brother Sai Prakash. From the next week onwards in the afternoon satsang, we will have Brother Prem back. But this time it's going to be me, Arvind, and Sai Prakash from Team Radio Sai to carry on with the Bhagavata Vahini satsang. And today's title is Blessing or Curse? It's a very, very interesting thought, and Swami has planted it so beautifully in the Bhagavata Vahini. So we will be diving into it, but before that, we would like to offer our most humble and loving and grateful prostrations at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, who is ever present in our hearts and present here in the studio as we speak in his presence. And yes, Sai Ram, Brother Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram. You know, listening and reading Bhagavata Vahini is such a pleasure, but the Sai Bhagavatam that we all have been a part of is so vivid and so, you know, beautiful. It, when you think about all the incidents and about what Swami has said and what Swami did, the sweetness is the same. Absolutely, there's no difference. And what I noticed when I was reading Bhagavata Vahini, I must have read it earlier, but you know, this time when I read it with the focus of actually doing Thursday Live, by the way, that's a great boon for us, because our job itself becomes part of our sadhana. What I realized is Swami is, you know, very beautifully and painstakingly putting forward the message and what he wants to convey through the dialogues. So basically, if there is a particular incident, we all know the same story, we all know, but the way Swami very beautifully brings the message across through the dialogues of different people, and that reflects their level of maturity on the spiritual plane and how their perspectives differ, and how that adds a lot of, you know, different points of view to the same story. I think that makes this whole rendition very, very interesting and very, very current, to say the least.
Absolutely. And that is what I feel will keep it relevant in times to come as well.
Right.
Because the times may change, the trends may change, the fashion may change. But this struggle between the values, the good and the bad, is an eternal one. And I think what Swami has written will definitely hold relevance for all times to come.
Right.
In fact, when you were saying about how Swami presents different perspectives, we had stopped last week at that point in time when King Parikshit has now stormed out of the hermitage in frustration and anger, because he's tired, he's very thirsty, he's lost in the hunt, and he has nobody around. He comes to this hermitage, he sees this hermit meditating, who doesn't seem to respond to him. He's a Chakravarti.
Yes.
He's the ruler of not just a kingdom or a small piece of land, but all the other kingdoms are subservient to him.
Right.
And for him, this hermit is not even responding. So, you know, in that irritation, in that frustrated kind of mindset that he is in, he picks up a dead snake and puts it around the neck of that sage and walks away. And this, we also got to know that happens to be sage Samika.
Yes.
A great renunciant, a great rishi, and he's lost in meditation. His son Sringi, who is also no less accomplished than his father,
right,
notices this, and he is very pained that somebody has insulted his father in this manner, and, you know, without even the slightest sense of repentance, seems to be walking away.
Right.
It's almost like the perpetrator of a crime is going to get away. And in that desperation, he's also angry. So he picks up water from the nearby holy Kaushiki river and pronounces a curse, saying that whoever this person is who has insulted my father in this manner will die from snake bite 7 days from now.
Right.
And no ordinary snake bite. The bite from king, the king of all the snakes, that is Takshaka.
Right.
So this is the curse he pronounces, and those of us who have some reading done of the Puranas and the Itihasas, we will realize that Takshaka's poison is very, very mighty. There is no escaping from the poison. In fact, in a few visual depictions that I have seen of King Takshak's poison, it is shown as if the moment he bites, the victim just vaporizes. That is the that is like the power of the poison. So it's almost like Sringi has picked up King Takshaka because he wants to ensure that the person there cannot escape death. And
in
that
fact,
is the curse he pronounces.
That's the curse Sringi pronounces. As you're mentioning this, you know, when I read this passage, the way Swami has written, one thing which came to mind is, Sringi was lost in his games. He was playing. The son of the stick was playing. And then his friends go and tell him that, you know, somebody has insulted your father and you are playing here. You have no sense of responsibility. Initially, he didn't believe in that. And he continued playing. And then because he was further instigated by his friends and playmates,
they repeatedly come and provoke him.
They provoke him. So then he says, oh my God, has it really happened? And then when he comes and sees it, sees the dead snake around his father's neck, he's already very angry, and he has, because of anger, lost all sense of reason. And he storms out along with these playmates. So they all are going, and then he sees this person dressed in the royal robes just walking away. And then he, Swami writes here that he's taking the water to curse, and his friends tell him, don't do it. That was very interesting. I said, his friends tell him, no, they tried to stop him. They said, don't do it. But he couldn't control himself. And you know, when I read both these statements, I just felt there is a subtle, you know, lesson for us here. Because we cannot do everything based on what others tell us. So now somebody comes and tells you, go ahead and do this. Oh, let me do this. Why? Because everybody is telling that. And if nobody is telling it, so just because everybody tells a lie, it doesn't become a truth. And everybody tells the truth, nobody tells the truth, it's still the truth.
Going along the same lines, I also feel that in a way it also calls for consistency in our behavior.
Exactly.
See, for example, if for the first time Sringi listened to his friends because they're telling him to, you know, go and do his responsibility.
Exactly.
The next time also he should have listened when they said don't curse. So I also feel there's this other message that apart from having your own strong discrimination and not being reactive, it also calls for consistency. I mean, if you're going to go based on what the world thinks, always do like that. If you go on the way you think, always do that.
Perfect. In fact, you know, a very nice story which Ramakrishna Paramahamsa narrates comes to mind. It's about this mad elephant running amok, running in the streets. So there is this hermit, hermit disciple. So he says, my guru says that there is God in everybody. So I will stand on the path of this mad elephant. And there is God in the elephant. The elephant can't harm me. So he stands on the path and everybody shouting at him, oh fool, move away. The elephant is going to crush you. And he says, no, God is there in the elephant. I will not move away. And the elephant comes and, you know, it's kind of in the rut. So it just, with its trunk, it just pushes this child to the side. And this fellow goes and falls down and he's hurt. And the elephant just keeps running, goes ahead. Now he's very sad and upset and he says, how did this happen? You know, my guru told me that God is there in everybody and God is there in this elephant. Why did this elephant hurt me? And then when he went back to the guru said, See, I said God is in everybody, but why didn't you believe that God is in the people who are telling you to move away? There were so many people telling you, move away. Why didn't you believe that God is there even in those people? Why do you believe that God is only in the elephant? And because in spite of all that, you still had faith that God is in the elephant, it just pushed you aside. Be happy, it didn't trample upon you and
crush you.
Wow. So
that's a beautiful message.
Yeah.
And coming back to the story here, once this curse is done, I think it's a kind of immediate guilt feeling that overcomes Sringi.
Absolutely.
Because all said and done, he's also an accomplished renunciant. He has also done a lot of sadhana tapas. Mm-hmm. And he definitely knows that loss of anger is not good for anybody, leave alone a renunciant.
Mm-hmm.
So he's standing there very distraught, feeling very sad, possibly tears streaming down his cheeks.
Mm.
At that point in time, Sage Samika comes out of his deep meditation.
Right.
And he notices that his son is standing there weeping and crying. And he asks him what has happened. And his son just says, Father, you know, he just factually tells what has happened. He says, here was this person and he...
No, before he calls his son, as he opens his eyes, he just takes the dead snake and puts it aside. As if, okay, fine. So, as he opens his eyes, he just takes the dead snake and just leaves it aside as if there's nothing.
No big deal.
And then he calls his son, and his son is kind of, already weeping and he's...
And, yeah, this is what it is. So, he narrates to him what has happened. Mm. And he says, Father, how could he do like this? And, you know, the son is very emotional. And I think that emotion comes in part because of him being upset at somebody doing this to his father.
Right.
And at the same time, it's also possibly because he's feeling bad that he reacted in such a strong and instantaneous, immediate manner. Possibly he should not have. So it's a mixture of emotions that he's having, because of which he's in that distraught state. And in that distraught state, when he narrates the happenings, Samika's response is phenomenal. You know, he just says, you know, that poor fellow, referring to King Parikshit, because Samika doesn't know who he is, what it is. He says that, see, he did it out of ignorance.
Hmm.
And if you are weeping for that, for an act that he did in ignorance, then you are revealing your ignorance. He says, see, I am not concerned either with praise or blame or honor or dishonor.
Hmm.
Because, that also he says, because the knowledge of the Atma, it enables the man to keep himself on an even keel.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, neither getting up when he's praised nor falling down when he's blamed. So he says, so this is the silly prank of some fellow, and because you're little boys, no, and you're emotional, possibly you're exaggerating it like a big crying, and you're feeling so bad as if something terrible has happened. There's nothing. And it's as simple as me brushing the snake aside, you know, like if you're sitting and some leaf happens to fall on your head, you brush it aside.
Absolutely.
In fact, it reminds me of the other episode also, I think. This is again taken from our Upanishads, where there is this hermit and he has attained so many siddhis and powers. When he's lost in meditation, a bird sits on the tree and drops, and there is dropping.
Mm-hmm.
The bird's dropping fall on his head, and he's so upset, he looks. Such is his yogic power that his anger reduces the bird into ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that, this hermit is thrilled. He says, wow, look at this power that I've got, you know. Look at this power that I've got.
Mm.
And yet, it is this same hermit who is guided by his guru to learn what is actual dharma from a housewife, from a butcher. You know, the story of Dharma Vyada is what comes here.
Mm.
And he is actually shocked. He's thinking that, what can I, a yogi, learn from a householder? And he goes to that householder's home. He calls out to the lady of the house, Bhavati Bhikshan Dehi, give me alms. And she says, just wait a minute, I'm serving my husband, because you know this is a lesson in duty for him, supposed to be. He starts getting irritated and upset because he thinks that the lady inside has no idea who he is. And he hears the voice from inside which comes. The lady says, don't think that I'm like that bird which you can burn down with your anger. Just keep calm. And he's shocked as to how does she know what has happened somewhere in the forest. That is when he realizes that, you know, it's a different line of thought, where he realizes that following one's dharma itself gives you so much power.
Absolutely.
And with great power comes great responsibility.
Correct.
In fact, if you are a truly spiritual being, you should have felt terrible at what you have done, you know, because you burned down a bird in your anger. It's correct. Not a moment to rejoice thinking how powerful I am.
Absolutely.
At least in that sense, Sringi is...
More advanced
here, you know.
He's very repentant. Very repentant.
Yes, but I'm being stupid by being judgmental, but I'm just doing the comparison. And so, Sringi is feeling bad because when Samika tells all this, you know, saying that you shouldn't get so upset about all this, it's nothing, no big deal, and he just brushes off the snake.
In fact, he says, just get up and go to the playground and continue playing.
As though nothing has happened.
Then
I think at this point in time, Sringi starts feeling terrible because he has to now tell his father that, Dad, you know, it's not just about that. There's a second part to why I'm feeling terrible because of what I've already done.
Right. That's what. And he has to, at this point, he has to tell that it is not a simple, it's not just anybody who did this act of, you know, disrespect, but it is the king. And the moment Samika hears that it is the king, he kind of sits up in caution and he says, no, this could not have been the king. In fact, that's what Swami has written. Because it is not a normal thing that a king does an action, you know, losing control of his of himself. Basically, so he says, this cannot be the king. Then they say, no, all the, you know, his friends and Sringi and everybody, they tell Samika that we saw that it is the king. And then they tell that in his anger, Sringi took this water from the river and he actually pronounced this curse. And Samika, who is this great sage, he is not upset with the king for having done this act of you know, disrespect, as others thought it is. Samika is upset with his son. He says, what amount of disgrace have you brought to this entire lineage of sages? I mean, for such a trivial offense, why did you behave like this? Then he says, what has happened to you? You have no strength of mind to bear such little affronts. He says, you don't have any, you know, perseverance. You don't have any sense of calm about you. For such small things, why are you getting so agitated?
You know, this holds good so much in today's scenario.
Right.
In our country, in the world, everywhere. Because, you know, so many clashes today that happen, so much of unrest that happens, is all at the level of the mind, you know. It is all at the level of you insulted my religion, you insult. Both means it's fault on both the sides, the one who wishes to insult and the one who gets insulted. And for these little things, people are being killed, people
absolutely.
Are being prosecuted, there's a lot of damage to property. What not happens just because one is unable to contain one's anger and one feels that it is such a big thing. You know, here if you see, Sringi says, it's an insult to a great sage. How can we tolerate it? And Samika says, it's no big deal, a snake and I brushed it off, it's over, it's done, you go and play. You know, what a difference.
Exactly.
In that thing, because the first reaction leads to a kind of, as we shall see later, a life-changing, kingdom-changing, world-changing thing. Because
right.
the person who has been cursed is not just a person, but a person who has got responsibility over the whole realm.
Right.
And the realm consists of multiple kingdoms. And today we see the same thing happening in society. You know, possibly you insult my guru, or you insult my god, or you insult my caste, or you insult my nationality, my race, whatever. And for the sake of that insult, we take up arms, what not we do.
Only thing is, today we have the added arm of technology, which spreads our
venom
spread quicker, venom. Instantly.
Yes.
It's instantly, you know, it's there all. In fact, this is a very important even in terms of relationships. See, because the number of divorces that are happening amongst youngsters, the number of people who are not able to take the work pressure and leaving their jobs, the number of people who are not, you know, who break away from their families and who go and live alone. I mean, it's all because of, in fact, what comes to mind is last Thursday we had Bhagya sir in our Vahini Satsang, and there he was narrating that one student was asking Swami, Swami, I'm having these bad thoughts, these bad habits and all that. Swami says, it is only for 5.5 seconds. If you are able to pause,
restrain,
pause in that 5.5 seconds, then that peak urge of whatever it is, it's anger, it is
kama krodha,
all the six. He says, in that 5.5 seconds, if you're able to pause, you have crossed it.
But on the other hand, as you said now, with the social media coming in so powerfully, Sringi had possibly 4 or 5 of his friends coming and telling, what is this man? Your father insulted you, you're not doing anything, go. Today we have millions fanning those things for us.
Exactly.
I might be totally unaware of something which will inflame my passions, inflame my rajas, my anger and all that. But social media is enough to ensure that it is personally packaged and hand-delivered to me at my doorstep. Not my doorstep, at my smartphone, at my cell phone, which is part of my body, with which I spend at least 4 to 5 hours a day if I'm an average user of the smartphone. And that is what is happening. And I feel we have got lots to learn from the way Sage Samika responds.
Exactly.
It's highlighted by how what Swami said, 5.5 seconds can I control my response. I think our response will be much more mature and wiser. I will not say it will be the best response, but it will definitely be better than the response better than the reaction that we plan to deliver 5.5 seconds before.
Yeah. In fact, this is a very interesting paragraph where Samika is actually telling who a renunciant is, who a recluse is. He says, moved by the yearning to achieve the vision and the presence of the guide and guardian of all the worlds, the recluse has given up all attachment. He has established himself in the forest. He lives on fruits and roots. He denounces all catering to the senses as detrimental to spiritual progress. That such horrid curses born of impatience and egoism should come on the tongue of a recluse is a sign of impending doom. It marks the dawn of the iron age of untruth, Samika said.
That is
Kali age. Welcome to the Kali age.
It's almost like a recluse cannot be reckless.
In fact, you know, when I read this line, this becomes the norm of today.
Yeah, this is normal.
In fact, you know, it's surprising. Suppose somebody criticizes you and you do not respond back.
That is surprising.
That is surprising. That could be put on Twitter and on, you know, Facebook, that here is somebody whom I shouted at and he didn't respond. That is very surprising, because this is the characteristic feature of today's day and age. And how beautifully he says, the whole idea of going away from, you know, and finding, trying to find, living in the forest and living on fruits and roots is to denounce the, you know, pull of the senses. So he says, when I'm trying to run away from the pull of the senses, you're kind of
plunging into it. In fact, he goes ahead and he explains to Sringi, he says, see, Emperor Parikshit, because now he knows that they have said he is the king of the land. He says, Emperor Parikshit is no ordinary person.
Yes.
He's a great devotee of God.
He is that's a person. A beautiful point. Yeah, he says, you know, he is a staunch theist.
He's a staunch theist and he has multiple spiritual attainments. He's a very moral ruler. And he's not just a ruler of one kingdom, he's a ruler supreme of several kingdoms. And he says, see, every day, every moment, he has got thousands to serve him at his slightest behest.
Right.
That is to directly serve him. There are millions in this whole region who respect him, who revere him, who love him, who would love to do anything for him. Such a kind of person he is. So I think we should give him a little, you know, legroom kind of, because not legroom actually, maybe headroom here. A little headroom, that when he comes here, he's tired, he's thirsty, and there is only this one person, you know, instead of thousands of people to attend on him, there's only this one person, and that one person doesn't seem to be caring for him at all. And so it is natural that he'll get upset, and it is great that when he got upset, he didn't do anything. I mean, he didn't put a live snake on me.
Correct.
He didn't cut my neck. He didn't do any of that. He just put a dead snake as a little vent to his frustration, and that snake does no harm to me in any way. Mm. Spiritually, not at all. Mentally, nothing. Even physically, nothing. Because it was not a live snake. Correct. And in return, what on earth have you done? You know, you have cursed him that a live snake is going to kill him.
Correct.
So, he actually recounts all the qualities of King Parikshit, and he say, it's almost like King Samika is telling that for all that he is, he's justified in doing nothing wrong that he did.
Exactly.
But you are not justified in doing this, you are wrong. This
Correct.
Is what he says.
In fact, just one step before he actually says this, he is upset with Shringi for doing the curse and not upset with the king.
Correct.
But then Shringi comes and pleads. He realizes his mistake. And then Swami says that he falls on the floor and grasping the feet of his father, he wails, "Father, pardon me. I was overcome by anger that the king himself should behave so outrageously, insolent and so irreverentially." So when he realizes his mistake, then the sage, because of his stature and who he is, instantly forgives him. He sees the truth of what has happened. And he gives a very, very beautiful statement here. He says, "The dictates of reason are often brushed aside by man due to that compulsion." So he says, you were under a compulsion.
This is that 5.5 seconds.
That 5.5 seconds. He says, "The drag of destiny will destroy the reins of reason." I mean, what a beautiful sentence it is. He says, yes, you should not have done that. But now that you are repentant and you are not holding on to that perspective, you have realized your mistake that you should not have done that. That is not your original nature. That nature of yours was forgotten for that short spell of time. And that is because of the compulsion of your vasanas, of that anger that came about you.
I think we should refer our listeners to our previous satsang on mind, where we spoke of chitta and how it gets colored by the vasanas.
Exactly.
So, yes.
So, you know, he says that has influenced you and that's what made you do that. Now that you've come out of it, I also look at it as the compulsion of the moment. And he says, you know, the drag of destiny will destroy the reins of reason.
In other words, what Swami says, what you meet in life is destiny. How you meet it is self-effort. So, I think when you are referring to the 5.5 seconds, that is the self-effort that Swami is referring to. Because, yeah, there will be things that will make us angry. But that can't be helped. How we respond to that is in our self-effort.
Is in our effort. Absolutely.
In fact, today also, when I was preparing a discourse for the Onam festival that's coming up soon, this
4th
Monday,
September.
4th
yes.
September. In that discourse also, Bhagwan is mentioning so much about anger. Speaking of which, it reminds me, dear listeners, we are very touched and overwhelmed by the multiple responses we got to our suggestion last week, where we thought that we should take up a satsang on anger management. And I think once Prem comes back, we will discuss, and very soon we will have an afternoon satsang on this theme of anger management. So we will hear many more discourse clips of what Swami says about anger. Now continuing back with the story, after Samika, you know, forgives Shringi. Yeah, because he has genuinely repented. The next thing he does is so beautiful. He sits in prayer and he prays for Parikshit.
Absolutely.
And not only does he pray for Parikshit, he summons all the other hermits in the hermitage and he implores them also to pray. This is so beautiful. He, you know, Samika is definitely a much more powerful sage and ascetic, and he has more powers than his son Shringi. And I think that is evident in the self-restraint and control that is shown by the two people. And yet, he has the humility to bow down and pray. And like it is said, fruit-laden tree always bends low. So too it is, the greater a person becomes, the more humble he becomes. And it's amazing to see this kind of humility from Samika, because though he is so powerful himself, yet bends down and prays for Parikshit. And he actually tells God, "Lord, whatever mistake my son has done, for that, whatever we are ready to suffer, my son is ready to suffer, but please protect and take care of the king."
He
that
says,
is the nobility.
That's what he says, pardon this boy or punish him.
No problem.
But promote the welfare of the king. I mean, that level of detachment and that level of, you know, dharma that he had. So he just prays to the Lord, and then everybody sitting around, they are a bit surprised. So in fact, he says, Swami writes that an aged monk rose up from amongst the people who are seated. And he said, see, you are such a great sage. And like you mentioned, definitely much advanced in your spiritual sadhana compared to your son. You can just undo what he has done.
Hmm.
Can't you just undo what he has done? And that is what everybody, Swami writes here, the children, the students, everybody joined in the same prayer. Like I remember we used to tell Swami, please come to the hostel. Swami, please, Swami, please, Swami, please. Everybody joins in. So as this monk rose up and asked the sage, can you please undo the curse? Everybody joined in.
And see, that is one more point to highlight. The fact that actually Samika is very powerful.
Yes.
But yet he has the humility to pray. And not only pray, he asks everybody else to pray, because praying for the king is directly like praying for the kingdom. Because yatha raja, tata praja, right. As is the king, so is the kingdom. You know, it brings to my mind how Swami would, even in the later years when he was confined to the wheelchair and physically he became weak, I have personally noticed that many times during the bhajan, Swami might be sitting silent, just looking at everything or closing his eyes. But many times towards the end, when it comes to Samasta Loka chanting, he himself would join in. You know, he would also join in and pray Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Because when he used to say that, when he used to do that, I used to think, Swami, this is strange. It's okay when all of us say, why are you doing it? Because you are the most powerful. We are actually praying to you. But I think that is the humility that comes with divinity. You know, speaking of the Samasta Loka, I'm reminded of one interesting thing. A friend's father had come home, and when we were speaking, he said a very interesting point. He said, you know, whenever I pray to God for anything, if I say I want a car, I pray that let all my neighbors also get a car, same car. So then he said, see, because if I get the car and they don't get, no, they will get envious. Then somebody may puncture the car, their negative vibrations and all will come. Why? Let everybody get the car, then all will be happy. And then he went on to say, see, the Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu is actually a beautiful prayer, because unless everyone around us is happy, we can't be happy.
Right. Very
true. Can't be an island of prosperity and joy in an ocean of misery and chaos. Therefore, pray for everyone. And I found this such a beautiful logic, you know, that when I am saying Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu, it's not as if like I am praying for others' peace and happiness. I am praying for my own peace and happiness, because I too am part of the world.
You are included in that.
Yes. In fact, I have an interesting episode also quickly. You know, when I was in 11th standard, we had a free hour and we were playing this dumb charade in the class. There was this classmate of mine, and it was a close contest. For those who don't know what is dumb charade, a word or a phrase has to be acted out without speaking.
Right.
The others have to guess what it is.
Mm.
So we were having this competition, and for fun we were playing it. And we were playing dumb charade because we are not supposed to make noise in the class. This classmate of mine, I saw him cheating and, you know, indicating what it is, and I didn't like it. I told him once or twice, don't do this, don't spoil the game. He didn't listen. When I saw him doing the same thing again, I also didn't succeed in that 5.5 seconds. I just turned and slapped him hard on his head.
Oh my God.
And then got ready, because I knew that his 5.5 seconds also will come now. But surprisingly, he seemed to have mastered his 5.5 seconds. Because he just sat. He just looked at me. He was holding his head in pain. He looked at me. Looked at me as if like questioning me, why did you have to do that? And to my utter disbelief, he did the worst thing possible, which is kept silent and didn't respond. You know, he didn't scold me, he didn't hit back, nothing he did. And it tortured me terribly, you know. It's a very interesting thing. We often think that silence is the response of the weak. Silence can also be a powerful response, because if he had hit me, possibly I wouldn't have felt as hurt as I felt when he just kept silent.
Absolutely.
Inside me I was screaming, come on man, hit back, or shout back, at least do something, because I've hit you. He just kept quiet, and after the day's classes I was feeling so terrible, you know. I was saying, Swami, something I have to do, you know, it's not enough if I go and tell sorry, I have to do something more than that. And those were the years when Swami, whenever he would materialize vibhuti, he would accept kerchief from the students who had a white handkerchief.
Correct, correct.
So I used to be one of the students who would always try to run for this chance. It means, you know, run and always have a handkerchief in my pocket. And I said, Swami, today, you know, this handkerchief, if you bless, I will go in the evening and give this to this Sridhar and also apologize. You know, So I felt this would be a good apology along with a handkerchief that has been blessed by Swami.
Mm.
You know, the amazing thing that happened was Swami blessed that handkerchief not once but twice that day.
Mm.
Means two times I got an opportunity where Swami created Vibhuti and I could give him the handkerchief. And you know, after that happened, I was thinking, you know, this is the only handkerchief that is blessed twice. Should I keep it? But then I thought, no, I should keep up my promise. And I did that. In fact, I went and gave him the handkerchief.
Mm.
The beautiful thing was he had seen me in Mandir going and offering it. And when he realized it was the same handkerchief, he was so overwhelmed, he actually gave me a hug. He gave me a hug and it felt so beautiful. And you know, today when I look back at that episode, I thought, see, for the first time, I did not pray for myself. Every time I want to give the handkerchief so that I can have a handkerchief blessed by Swami. For the first time, I wanted a handkerchief blessed by Swami for somebody else.
Mm.
And when I prayed it, I got double the blessing.
Absolutely.
And I felt, imagine praying for one person other than me gives me double the blessing.
Mm.
Now just extrapolate it if you pray for Loka Samasta, how it would be. So these were my thoughts, and I really feel that when we pray for everybody, when we pray for the good of everybody, invariably, in multiples, that same good comes on to us.
Very beautiful. In fact, of course, we have limited choices, but look at Samika. He has got the choice of undoing the curse also. Like, we have a choice. Okay, you could go and tell him sorry.
That's all. I mean, I can't take back the
hit. You can't take back the
the hit and the punch pain. And the insult, yes.
But here is Sage Samika, who had the power and the capability to withdraw the curse. But what does he do? Swami writes, the Sage Samika smiled. He closed his eyes. He saw with his inner yogic vision the past and the future of the king, and examined whether his present was conditioned by his past or by his future. What details, you know, just see Swami's. He found that Parikshit had to suffer the poison bite of the cobra, Takshaka, and that this was his destiny. He felt that trying to save him from this end will be going counter to the dictates of divinity. He realized that the misbehavior of the king and the angry reaction of his son were both the consequences of that compulsive urge. He concluded that only God, the artificer of all resolutions and achievements, can modify events, and that any effort on his part would amount to an exhibition of egoism.
Wow.
What a powerful, powerful paragraph. He says, the sage who is the Trikala Jnani, who could go and see whether this act of the king was done because of the consequences of his past actions, or is it a seed for the future actions. So he was able to see beyond, you know, across all the three time zones. And then he realized that everything was part of the divine will.
And this raises another important point about this Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu.
Mm.
When we say Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu and we say let there be good for everyone, and we say that, you know, we have been doing this and the last 10 years things seem to have deteriorated, that is because possibly we don't know what is actually good.
Right.
What seems good for me today, tomorrow I may feel, no, that was bad. Actually, it should not have been. It should have been like this. It is only a person who has knowledge of all the three, the past, present and future, who can decide what is good and what is bad.
Mm.
And he is in charge, and that's why it is best that we leave the decision of the goodness and badness to God. See, for example, Samika, if any one of us had been Samika in the sense of the powers that he had, without the wisdom that he had, then possibly we would have recalled the curse.
Right.
And we shall see later that recalling the curse would actually have been a curse on Parikshit.
Right.
Because this curse becomes a blessing.
He was not impulsive. He didn't, you know, act on that instant impulse.
Yes. So, in that sense, if you see, impulsive acting even on the good is possibly not so good in the long run. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, you know, just a slight digression from here. One of the very old devotees of Swami, she asked Swami many, many years, decades back, maybe in the 50s or 60s or, you know, late 60s. Swami, when we go to any other ashram, when we go to different ashrams, there is so much of peace and calm and there is so much of serenity and, you know, we feel. But when we come here, there are so many impatient people. Everybody is shouting at me. You know, I go to the accommodation, I get shouted at. I go to the mandir, the sevadals are shouting at me. Some staff is shouting at me. I'm not supposed to do this, I'm not supposed to do that. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Why is it like this? I don't understand this. And Swami smiled and said, that is the power of this place. She said, Swami, I didn't understand. What is this? Swami said, when the churning started happening, when the, you know, the devas and asuras were churning, what came out first? She said, Swami, hala hala came out first.
Poison.
So Swami says, this place is so powerful, Prashanti Nilayam is so powerful, the moment anyone steps in here, their churning has begun.
So all the poison in them comes out.
All the poison in them. If they are getting angry, that means anger is in them. Nobody is causing the anger. They are causing anger themselves. But it is all inside them. So it is coming out. In the process of purification, he says, your anger, your envy, your jealousy, your shouting, your everything comes out because it's all inside you. And slowly, step by step, he in fact mentioned that this is like a car workshop.
Hmm.
Where the moment the car comes into the garage, the tinkering has begun. The mechanic, the star mechanic is here already doing the tinkering and setting you right.
And on that note, dear listeners, we'll take a little break. And in this break, we will pray for the peace and happiness of the whole world. And a peace and happiness as decided by Bhagwan, because we neither know what is good nor what is bad. We just know that when we pray for the welfare of the world, our welfare in it too gets included. Don't go away anywhere. After this little break, we'll continue with our discussion.
Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Jagatiloni janulandaru anandamu nundali, pragati margamuna nadachi sarvonnati nundali. జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందము నొందాలి, ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి.
సర్వే జన సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
సర్వే జన సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
సర్వే జన సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
పంచను చేరి మంచితనము నేర్చుకొని, మాయా మర్మముల వీడి వంచనముల విడనాడి. సాయి పంచను చేరి మంచితనము నేర్చుకొని, మాయా మర్మముల వీడి వంచనముల విడనాడి. సర్వం కల్విదం అంటూ సాయి సంఘులై ఎల్లరూ, కల్విదం అంటూ సాయి సంఘులై ఎల్లరూ. సద్గుణముల నందాలి, సద్గతులను పొందాలి. సద్గుణముల నందాలి, సద్గతులను పొందాలి.
సర్వే జన సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
సర్వే జన సుఖినో భవంతు, లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు.
Thank you.
కోటికాధారం ప్రాణవాయువైనట్లు ప్రాణవాయువుకు మూలం చైతన్యం అయినట్లు జీవకోటికాధారం ప్రాణవాయువైనట్లు ప్రాణవాయువుకు మూలం చైతన్యం అయినట్లు ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసముల చైతన్యం ఈతడే ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసముల చైతన్యం ఇతడేనని విశ్వాసమంది సాయి చరణారవిందముల విశ్వాసమంది సాయి చరణారవిందముల జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందమునొందాలి ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి జగతిలోని జనులందరూ ఆనందమునొందాలి ప్రగతి మార్గమున నడచి సర్వోన్నతి నొందాలి
సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు లోకా సమస్త సుఖినో భవంతు సర్వే జనా సుఖినో భవంతు
వెల్కమ్ బ్యాక్ డియర్ లిసనర్స్ అండ్ వీ జస్ట్ రియలైజ్ దట్ సమస్త లోకా సుఖినో భవంతు ఇస్ అన్ ఐడియల్ ప్రేయర్ అండ్ దట్ ఇస్ వాట్ స్వామి హస్ యు నో inspired all of us to pray after every bhajan session here in Mandir. But how that samasta loka sukhino bhavantu should happen, we do not know that. Like, we just have to pray that everybody should be happy, but we should not tell God, do it this way, do it that way. He is not here up for any recommendation, because we really do not know what is in the best interest of the whole world. So getting
back, you know, speaking, yes, when you said this, I was just telling, when one of my sisters became a doctor, I was saying to somebody else that, you know, I prayed that her doctor practice should grow well.
Mm-hmm.
So the other person said, so do you mean that you want more patients in that locality? I said, no, not like that. Then if there are no more patients, how will her practice grow?
Mm.
I said, I don't know. So this is what happens when we pray. Our prayers are all very narrow and only taking only some things into consideration.
Mm.
It's only God who can have that overall broad perspective.
Absolutely. In fact, here Sage Samika, because he's a jnani and he realizes that this is what is God's will, and any effort on his part to kind of go against that the flow of events amounts to his egoism. Swami says that he knew that egoism is the deadliest foe for hermits, and so he didn't want to, you know, get into that line. So instead, what he did, he said he looked at his disciples and he said he picked a clever one from there and he said, I have some message for the king. Are you ready to go all the way to the kingdom and then deliver this message?
And the disciple said, anything for you, master. You know, we can so easily empathize with this episode, because this is what would happen. Swami would pick and tell, okay, chinna pani undi, there's a small work. Yes, Swami, anything. You know, you go there and tell me, we will run with all our speed, go and convey, because, you know, we feel that feeling of importance the way Hanuman is or something like that. And for that point in time, we are indeed like that, because it is Rama commanding a monkey over here.
Right.
And we are rushing to do it.
So the sage tells him, he takes him inside. I mean, these details are what makes Swami's narration so beautiful. Swami says, Swami picked the boy and he took him inside his hermitage and, you know, secretly or silently just whispered into his ears the message that has to be conveyed to the king. He could have told him in front of the entire audience, but no, this is something for the king. So, you know, this kind of mannerism that he called him
inside. Actually, we see later, this thing being told in public will possibly have led to more adoration and adulation for the guru.
Exactly.
What a noble thing the guru is doing. But I think, yeah, the guru doesn't seek.
He's beyond. He did it because that is right. See, he is not doing anything for the sake of getting anybody's praise or anybody's blame. He is just doing what is right. He is doing it because it has to be in line with what God wants. In spite of the turn of events, what is the best I can do to, you know, warn the king? So he sends this disciple. And on the other hand, Swami says, the king, having reached the palace and taken a little bit of rest, suddenly realizes, oh my God, when he wakes up, he says, what a sin I have committed. And the king is very repentant. He said, shall I rush to the hermitage and plead for pardon? What should I do? And he is confused what his duty is at that point in time. Because, you know, he has realized that he has committed such a great crime, but he doesn't know what to do. And at that point, the guard comes and announces that there is a disciple from the hermitage.
And that is like perfect timing for him, because
right,
just now this, excuse me, just now this is what is bothering him, and here comes a disciple from that very hermitage. It's almost like many times, you know, we are praying for something and a person says the same thing, or in such a speaks that same thing comes, that kind of goosebumps he gets.
In fact, here Swami writes, he says, when these words fell on his ears, the bed of jasmine flowers on which he was reclining appeared to have been transformed into a bed of snakes with fiery tongues. So it's, you know, it's like,
it's like he sprang out of bed. I mean,
yeah. And it, this also is the kind of feeling anybody gets when they are guilty. See, I was just thinking about it, like the king has realized his mistake, and then here is somebody who's coming, he does not know with what intention this messenger has come, and wherever he's sitting, it's just like anything that is good around him, you know, turns into poison.
And that is the masterstroke of the master writer that Swami is. On one hand, he's showing the guilt that King Parikshit is feeling.
Right.
On the other hand, he also shows the force and speed with which the king got up hearing this, because this is foremost in his mind. And so he immediately asked the soldier who has brought the news as to how is the, means how is the disciple who has come, you know, is he angry, is he upset, is he calm, is he collected? Because I think by getting a clue of how he is, the king is able to make out what is in store for him possibly.
Exactly, what are the consequences?
So the soldier replies saying that, no, you know, he's come, and in fact, he's in a very adoring kind of nature, because you know he's going on saying victory to the king. Maharaj ki jai ho, Parikshit ki jai ho.
Possibly. Right.
So he's shouting victory and praises of your name, but he says that he has got something very, very important to convey to you. So then the king says, so then what did you tell him? No, we told him that the king has just returned from the hunt. He's very tired. He wishes to take a little rest. So he's resting. So and they offer him a good place in the palace. They say, why don't you sit here and wait till the king comes? And the soldiers say that, but he is not ready to wait like that.
Right.
Because he is just eager. He says, no, I've got something very important to tell him, tell the king. And therefore, since it's urgent, the messenger is not even sitting. He is just standing outside your door, waiting for however long it takes.
And so when they narrate this, the king says, okay, please bring him in. And the king is actually very happy that the ascetic is not angry with him. And he says, tears welled in the eyes of the king when he realized that in spite of what he has done, the ascetic is still praising glories to the king. And he calls him, and then he, with all due respect, he says, the king starts rushing towards the gate himself. He says, wiping his tears off, he hurried towards the entrance. He says, without donning his royal robes, without, you know, wearing even footwear, he starts rushing towards the door himself. And then he brings the sage, the boy in, and prostrates at his feet, gives him a seat, a proper seat, and then asks, tell me the reason, why have you come here?
And so the messenger lad, he now describes the whole episode. Now, from his perspective, we get to hear this perspective. We have heard Samika's perspective. Now we hear this messenger's perspective. And he says that, see, of course you had come very tired and very fatigued, very thirsty after the hunt. So when we hear this, we come to know that the lad is also not having any kind of ill will towards the king. He says that you were in that condition and you put the snake around his neck and his son was playing there. He didn't notice, and he described, you know, Swami again writes the same thing.
Right.
Once the son was told, but he didn't listen. Again, they told him multiple times. It's like when the disciple is narrating, he makes it clear to the king that I don't think that you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he also lets him know that I don't think that Sringi is also wrong, because right. he was goaded by his friends, and in that fit of the same kind of fit in which you put the snake, it's the same kind of fit in which he did.
Absolutely.
So if one is forgivable, the other is also forgivable. And he says, so this is what happened, and he pronounced a curse. And you know, that is what is very shocking. That is what is very has troubled my master. And when he says this, you know, again, I felt that the way this disciple is conveying is that I am feeling pain not because of all this, simply because it has pained Samika. My guru is pained, and therefore I am pained. My guru is pained by this thing that he cursed you, and that is what I have come to inform.
In fact, when he starts off, he says, Sage Samika sends his special blessings to you. He says, he asked me to communicate this. And as he's telling, the king is already very, very, you know, respectful, and he's, you know, just wondering what is going to be what the message is going to be. And then he immediately says, tell me what I should do. Should I give up this kingdom? Should I lay down my life for this sin that I've done? Or is my kingdom in danger? I mean, this was something which was very, very surprising. The king, he says, is my kingdom in danger because of the act that I did? And he always put his kingdom first. Then he put himself. And, you know, this acronym which Swami often says, JOY. He says, Jesus first, others next, yourself last.
Same with Sai.
Same
Sai
with
first, all others next, I last.
I last. So he said, then the disciples says, no, it's not that. The hermits, they are not, nobody's upset with you. No harm is going to come to the kingdom. Then the king says, oh, if the hermits are not angry with me, and if there is no harm coming to the kingdom, I don't care what happens to me. He says, if these two are fine, then I don't care what happens to me. And at that point in time, the disciple tells what the curse actually is.
Yes, he tells him that a curse has been put by taking up the waters of the Kaushiki River by Sringi.
Mm-hmm.
And the curse is that 7 days from now, you will be bitten by Takshaka.
Mm.
And that will be the end of your life. So it is with great pain that I'm conveying this to you. And again, once again, I want to underline and highlight that the pain that he's feeling is not out of sympathy for the king, but the pain that this disciple is feeling is because my guru has been pained by this.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that's also another beautiful trait of a disciple. He has no likes and dislikes or pains and joys of his own.
Mm-hmm.
His guru's likes and dislikes, guru's pains and joys become his own. And you know, it makes sense, because the guru too actually has no joys and sorrows or likes and dislikes.
Mm.
But in keeping with that ultimate objective, in keeping with that ultimate selflessness, in this human body that he has donned, he acts out like he has likes and dislikes. Like our Swami has done so many times. We know what Swami likes, what Swami doesn't like. We know that Swami has clearly said, I don't need a medium to speak through. And if anybody comes as a medium, he's a demon. He's a Rakshasa, one who claims that he is hearing me and talking to you. You know, all this, we know that Swami likes this, Swami doesn't like this. In the ultimate sense, Swami has no likes and dislikes.
Right.
But when he has taken on the human vesture, following the dharma, he has set what is likes and what is dislikes. And we, if we consider ourselves as disciples of Swami, like this disciple, we should have no likes or dislikes. Mudan Ali is doing a scam there. It's not that I dislike that. But I am pained by it because this is what my Swami disliked. Can we become like this disciple, wherein our likes and dislikes are completely decided and commanded by the likes and dislikes of our Master and God?
In fact, this is such a important point. One step beyond this, like our likes and dislikes are definitely to be guided by and inspired by what Swami likes and dislikes. But there is that beautiful episode of Rama telling Lakshmana, you build a hut when they go to the forest. He says, build a hut of your choice, location of your choice. And Lakshmana totally breaks down. He says, when did I have a choice?
When did I have a thing like my choice?
My choice.
My choice is always your choice.
Your choice. He says, why are you distancing me from that? So, the first level is, of course, likes and dislikes. And the second is, every action, every effort that we make should be in tune with what Swami would have approved and what Swami wants. That is ultimately how we grow to it. So, when this curse of Sringi was narrated to the king smiled. Here Swami says, the emperor only smiled. He says, young hermit, is this really a curse? Is this really a curse? He said, the beauty of Swami's narration is, he says, the king says, immersed in the affairs of the empire, I had become slothful regarding the affairs of the spirit and of God. And so my attention was not on divinity, on my spiritual path. So God, with all his compassion, has made this entire drama happen so that I, turn refocus. Back towards, refocus towards.
And that is the amazing thing. Usual response to a curse would be sorrow and depression.
Right.
A very wise response would be calm acceptance. But here what we see is a third. Here we see celebration. This is amazing because I feel this aptly describes what Swami would say, love my uncertainty.
Absolutely.
When Swami's uncertainty benefits us, we are sick and we are in the hostel, and instead of giving darshan, if Swami comes to the hostel, we are thrilled by that uncertainty.
Mm.
But what if I was not the sick guy and I was in the mandir?
Mm-hmm.
I would have hated that uncertainty. Swami, I have come all the way to mandir for your darshan, and you have gone off to hostel. So, when the uncertainty benefits us, definitely we celebrate.
Mm.
But when the uncertainty goes against us, I've got a bus to catch at 6 p.m. and Swami comes for darshan only at 6:30 and I miss darshan.
Mm.
I'm giving examples with Swami's physical frame.
Mm.
Or I pray for my mother's health or somebody who's dear to me for their health, and it actually worsens and they possibly pass away or doesn't go as I'm expecting.
Right.
In those times, we hate his uncertainty. And I remember Professor U.S. Rao, sir, he was saying that Swami says, love my uncertainty.
Mm.
I think first we should stop hating his uncertainty.
Mm.
And then we should graduate to accepting his uncertainty.
Correct.
And finally we can love his uncertainty, because loving his uncertainty means celebrating it the way Parikshit did here.
In fact,
celebrating it and saying it's not a curse, it's a blessing.
Those are the three stages of surrender, possibly. Accepting and celebrating in his uncertainty. In fact, when I hear this curse and the way Swami says Takshaka, several chapters before, it was the same Takshaka who was released and who escaped from that Khandava forest.
Correct.
Swami has selected a few episodes which he has narrated in this book, and in a very subtle way they link to each other. When Arjuna and Krishna were helping Agni to burn down the forest, this Maya along with Takshaka were trying to escape from the forest. That's what Swami says. And Krishna was, going ahead and making sure no bird, no animal, nothing escapes from the forest. But Maya came and held the feet of Arjuna. And Arjuna kind of gave him, his protection.
Hmm.
And because of that, Maya and Takshaka
could escape.
Same grandfather of Parikshit was the cause
for his grandson to...
Yes. And Krishna made sure... Krishna made sure that Takshaka escaped from the forest.
Hmm.
So, like, when
you're saying... At that point in time, you feel like... this discussion, Prem and me, we had it.
Hmm.
As to how can God be so cruel?
Hmm.
How can Krishna go around and ensure that no bird escapes?
Right.
It's okay, you allow him to burn the forest.
Hmm.
But if some bird or an animal is lucky to escape, let it escape, no? And, of course, those of the listeners who missed it can go back to that satsang. And we had a very interesting and enlightening discussion. It was very nice. And the points came up as to how Krishna can do like that. But now you see, at that point in time, if Arjuna could have said that, Krishna, he has taken refuge, come on, let's allow him.
Mm.
If that Arjuna was alive to see this day, he would have told, oh Krishna, I shouldn't have stopped you.
Right.
I should not have stopped. As you rightly said, we have no idea what is good and bad.
Actually, in fact, just a slight detour, I'm sure you have mentioned it in the course of your discussion. Swami says that Mahabharata itself is Panchama Veda. And one of the reasons why it is, it has the status of a complete Veda in itself, he says, is that all the major characters of Mahabharata, none of them are born in a natural way and none of them die in a natural way. So, you know, everything, right, everybody, right, from Pandavas, Kauravas, everybody is, you know, they are not born in a natural way. And so, this is absolutely God's master plan. This entire Mahabharata, the enactment of this whole drama, has been done only to give us these lessons, immortal lessons.
Absolutely. So, coming back to Parikshit celebration, it really is an inspiration for us because he celebrates. He celebrates what can, is possibly a curse, and he says it's a blessing. You know, it shows the true nature of a realized person.
Right.
A realized person is always in a state of bliss because there's nothing like a curse for him. Everything is a blessing. He takes everything as a blessing. That is what is surrender that we spoke about. And in fact, I remember, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita itself, when Krishna is asked to name the qualities in his devotee that are dear to him, he says, Anapeksha, Shuchir, Daksha, Udasino, Gatavyataha. And in that, the first word is Anapeksha. Anapeksha means not having any expectation. Not having any expectation is another way of saying absolute surrender.
Absolutely.
I have no surrender. And that is why, you know, it is also said, Sukha Dukhe Samay Kritwa. It is a person of equanimity who is a true devotee.
In fact, the last phrase of that sloka, Anapeksha Suchir Daksha Udasino Gatavyata Sarvaramba Parityagi
Yomad
Bhakta Samay Priya. That devotee is dear to me who gives up, you know, he gives up this thing, expectations of any kind. Tyagi, he just gives it up.
And again, you know, just highlighting it once again, when he says he gives up expectation, it doesn't mean that I have no expectation but I sit and crib and cry. Because if the moment I crib and cry, it means I had something and it went against.
Right, right.
And if I celebrate irrespective of what happens, it just means that I'm totally in sync. Whatever God wants, I'm happy with that and I'm celebrating it.
Absolutely.
And that is what Parikshit displays. And I think the time is ripe for us to take another little break.
Sure.
On this theme of being equanimous, sukha dukhe samay kritva, whether joy or happiness, when we are same, whether sometimes we get sorrow, sometimes we get joy, if we are able to take both as Bhagavan's prasadam, that is what makes our Swami happy. There is a Hindi song exactly on this theme. After this song, dear listeners, we will continue and conclude our satsang for today.
कभी दुख है मिला मुझे जो मिला सब तुमने दिया कभी सुख है मिला कभी दुख है मिला मुझे जो मिला सब तुमने दिया बाबा चली कभी तूफान आया हर मुश्किल में तुझको साथ पाया कभी आंधी चली कभी तूफान आया हर मुश्किल में तुझको साथ पाया जैसे तुमने चाहा वैसे अब तक जिया, जैसे तुमने चाहा वैसे अब तक जिया। मैंने तेरे हवाले जीवन किया, कभी सुख है मिला कभी दुख है मिला, मुझे जो मिला सब तुमने दिया। बाबा तुम हो प्रभा, मैं हूँ दास तेरा। बाबा तुम हो प्रभु, मैं हूँ दास तेरा। मैंने तेरे हवाले जीवन चांदी नहीं हीरे मोती नहीं, मेरा साई मुझको दिख जाए कहीं। सोना चांदी नहीं हीरे मोती नहीं, मेरा साई मुझको दिख जाए कहीं। जब ध्यान किया तेरा नाम, जब ध्यान किया तेरा नाम लिया, मैंने तेरे हवाले जीवन किया। कभी सुख है मिला कभी दुख है मिला, मुझे जो मिला सब तुमने दिया। बाबा
Welcome back, dear listeners. Just before this break, we were speaking about how equanimity is a true hallmark of a devotee, of how a true devotee celebrates in both scenarios, which the world sees as happy or the world sees as sad, the devotee sees as a gift from God and therefore it has to be celebrated. How else can you respond to a gift from God other than celebration? That is the perspective and attitude of a devotee. You know, Sai Prakash, it reminds me of a personal experience of this aspect, that everything that happens is for the good. It really got tested, and this is very vivid in my mind because it happened after Swami's physical departure. So my father had and has some health problems, but every time anything would crop up, you know, I would tell Swami and Swami would tell something and give a reassurance, it would be fine. In fact, when all the doctors in Mumbai were suggesting a cardiac surgery, Swami said no need, and to this day, 9 years after that, he has had no cardiac surgery, everything is going well. So it was all fine when Swami was physically there. Then in sometime in 2012 or 13, you know, as we were traveling to Bangalore, we got the news that my father is complaining of severe backache. And we reached back to Parthi, and when we went to the super speciality hospital, we got to know that he has got multiple stones in his kidney. And some of the stones were big. So the doctors, after consulting the reports and seeing everything, you know, they were suggesting that we should possibly go in for a surgery as well. And I immediately wanted the surgery to be done as soon as possible, because I saw how my father was writhing in pain. He was in terrible pain, clutching his back. In fact, you know, he was requesting me, you know, saying, can you get that relief spray and spray? That muscular relief spray that you get. Mm. He was asking to be sprayed on his back. And I did not have the heart to tell him that, Dad, it's going to be of no use because it's not a muscular pain. It's inside. But such was the thing that he was desperate for relief. At this time, when I was trying to tell the doctor that please schedule the surgery as soon as possible, they were also cooperative about that. They also said, we'll do it. They wanted to do some checks because he's a cardiac patient. And when they tested, his blood pressure and blood sugar were way out of bounds, you know. Oh. They had shot very high and they were terrible. And they said that, you know, this is not a situation in which we can do surgery. Mm. He has to bring it under control. So I asked them, so is it postponed by 4 days, 5 days? They said, no, at least by a month. Mm. You have to show a good control. It's not like one day you suppress it, today you don't eat food and come back tomorrow. Mm. For 1 month you should show, and there's one test which shows the average over 3 months. It's called the HbA1c test. And they said, so after 1 month only the surgery can be. And so I went back home and I had to see this painful sight of my father lying in bed, crying, you know, writhing in pain, and it was terrible. And at that point in time, somehow this thing came up of whatever happens is good. And I turned internally to my Swami and said, Swami, how can this be now? Okay. Maybe the stones in his kidney is for some good. Okay. I accept that. But how can high BP and high sugar be good? You know, if those high BP and high sugar was not there, my father would be out of that pain by tomorrow, you know. The surgery would be done and it would be over. Okay. Of course, the surgery, they said that though it is a routine surgery, the surgery, like any surgery, carries its own risks because you're cutting up and you're going to the internal parts. And in some cases, it has even led to people losing control on voiding their bladder, you know. So incontinence it leads to. All these things happen. But those are all minor risks in the sense, low probability risks, but still there are risks. So I was thinking, anytime, you know, this pain is terrible, how can this be better? So this was the time I really feel that I tested out how can something so terrible be good.
Hmm.
You know, how can stones in the kidney and sugar and high BP be good for my father? Tell me, Swami, how can this be?
Hmm.
And so it happened that I saw him every day. I used to have this thought. For 4 days, I saw him struggle in pain. After 4 days, somehow the pain reduced or he didn't seem to have that much pain. And I felt that possibly the stones would have moved inside.
Correct.
Because of which they are in some other position which is not causing him pain.
Right.
God knows when it will come. I just hoped that for the next 1 month at least they don't get back into that painful position.
Mm.
And that's what actually happened. Over the next 20-25 days, he didn't have pain. And I was very happy. We went to the hospital and this time they had to do the tests. And this time it was all fine. His BP was fine. His sugar was fine. So I was very thrilled. So went told the surgeon that, you know, it's all fine now, that he can get the operation done. To my utter disbelief, you know, this person, this radiologist, he had come specially from Argentina. I forgot his name. He's supposed to be an expert. He had come to teach. And he's the one who did my father's scan.
Scans.
And he came out and told me, you know, your father is cleared for surgery. But let me tell you, he doesn't need surgery because there are no stones. And I, you know, we both were shocked because my father had not experienced any stone coming out. But there was simply no stone. No stone to be seen at all in the scans. The moment we came out of that consult, you know, my father said, see Arvind, good know that that time my sugar and BP went high because otherwise simply they would have cut me. I had to undergo a surgery.
Mm.
You know, it was almost like I felt Swami speaking through him to hit me at my doubt.
Mm.
What you thought for those 4 days, you just see it was not needed at all. And I said, yes, Dad, it is good. You know, this is what it is, as I was saying, that we don't understand what is good and bad. Because 1 month later, I was thanking Swami for that high BP and high sugar.
Correct.
The same thing that I actually was telling Swami, this is bad. This is how it is. We have to take it on faith. Now, based on this experience, now if anything happens to me, it is with faith that I should accept that this is good for me.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, this reminds me of another very interesting episode. When Swami was physically around, this was, you know, we were preparing for the 85th birthday, the Prema Pravaham songs.
Program.
Program. 85th birthday program in the evening. And the whole idea was that these songs will be made into music videos and they will be sung live by the students and we'll have a video going along with them.
I remember how Professor G.V. had this vision that just like Lava and Kusha sang the entire history, story of Rama in Rama's presence,
right,
after Rama had done everything.
Yes.
This will be Swami's children singing the entire Swami's life in Swami's presence, after Swami has done all this in his life.
Absolutely, and that's how that was the most historic birthday celebration, because Swami was, that was the last birthday celebration we had him in the physical form. So anyways, it's not that because all of us are working for Swami and everybody is doing, Swami doesn't leave even that, you know, opportunity to teach us a lesson. So when the songs were being composed, the lyrics of some of the songs were ready, and some of the songs were being already tuned in Chennai, and they were actually putting the background music and tuning the track. Suddenly what happened was, some of the elders here felt that no, these lyrics are not really powerful and we want to change the whole thing. So it came as a, there was no time, not much time. It was already in the last week of October, and November, the students had to learn the songs, they had to practice, and then they had to, you know, we had to really fix the visuals and all. And like most of Swami's projects, there's no time. It was just, and so repeatedly I was getting this information that they were telling, why don't you change the songs? Stop the work and change the songs. So initially I was trying to fight it back. I said, no, now it's too late, you know, we are already tuning the tunes, we are already, why, what is wrong and all that. Then
change the songs, meaning they wanted some familiar songs to be...
No, they wanted different lyrics, they wanted a different set of lyrics, they wanted a different person to do it, they wanted a different type of tuning, everything. And it was too late to venture into something new. And I was battling with the idea, and I said, why? Why do they want to do that? And the only response came, maybe Swami was not happy with these lyrics, or Swami was not happy with these tunes. But Swami didn't say anything like that.
You've actually had the opportunity to physically do a rehearsal in his presence.
Yeah, but that was much later. This was before that. And we were actually wondering why these people wanted it to be changed. And the 2-3 days, you know, I was getting these repeated messages, you should do it, you should change it and all that. Then obviously the tension was growing, and then one day I sat in my room in the office and I prayed to Swami. I said, Swami, how can these two things go wrong? How can they be contradictory? Because on one side, you are the one who has made sure that these people have come forward and written the lyrics. You are the one who has fixed the music director and he's already going ahead and doing the work. But you are the same person who is putting a block to this work from going ahead. You are the one who is sending this kind of information that, you know, we have to change the entire lyrics. I said, Swami, there is some lesson you are trying to teach me here. And that lesson is with me. The lesson is for me. It is not for anybody else.
As they say, every problem is a messenger who vanishes the moment the message is received.
That's all. So I realized that the message is for me. The learning is mine. And I sat in front of Swami's photo and I said, Swami, I know what the problem is. The problem is, I am thinking that I am doing this project. I have been thinking that, oh, I sent this, I did this, I did that, I did that. Cut all that. Swami, you are the one doing this project. And I am nobody. I am just an instrument. You are the one doing every bit of this project. The moment I, you know, prayed this way and slept at night, next morning, early in the morning, I get the information that all the elders have decided that maybe, these are the exact words, they said, maybe this is what Swami wants. So let it go in the way it is already happening.
Wow.
Just next day, next morning. And then what happened? The last song which had to be finalized, I said, now since they got another poet, why should we, you know, hurt his enthusiasm? He wanted to participate for Swami's birthday. So we gave him the opportunity to compose one song. That was the last song, Adugu Aduguna. And he came up with such wonderful lyrics.
Oh, in fact, that was a song that was sung recently during
Ganesh Chaturthi. And he came up with such wonderful lyrics. So everything, you know, if somebody is patting you on the back, that is because of God's will. Somebody is, you know, putting a roadblock, that is God's will. Somebody is praising you, blaming you, whatever it is, it's God's will. When you do that, you will be in line with what he actually wants.
I feel that's a lovely message we can take away even as we conclude this satsang, that to be equanimous in times of joy and sorrow, the best way is not to focus on the joy or the sorrow, but to focus on what is there in it for us to learn. Learn that and celebrate that the Lord is constantly helping us evolve and go closer to Him. Because, dear listeners, isn't that the ultimate objective of all our lives here? That we grow closer and closer to our Swami. Ultimately go so close to Him that there's no difference between Him and us. That is what Swami always says, that there's no difference between you and me. And it is up to us to grow to that level. Offering this Bhagavata Vahini Satsang at His lotus feet, we express our gratitude to Him and pray that we become one with Him. And until then, may we be able to be equanimous in the face of Sukha and Dukha, take everything as His prasada, as His gift to us, and therefore celebrate it. With that, dear listeners, we'll play this song, an English song, at the end of which you will be joined in by Brother Chandu for his segment Love to Love. So, till we meet you next week, it's Sai Ram from the afternoon segment team here, afternoon satsang segment team here. Jai Sai Ram.